Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Suhey Piedra.
I have a client who was making $75,000 a year, you know, now owns 12 properties, is able to retire early because the majority of them are paid off.
Welcome to the Conference Room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to the Conference Room. Good afternoon and welcome to the Conference Room. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Suhey Piedra. Suhey is the co-founder of Prominence Business and Wealth Management. It's a tax planning advisory firm which enables high-earning service-based business owners achieve long-term wealth through a holistic approach to financial services. Suhey also hosts and produces her own podcast, Tax Talk with Heihei, where she provides insight into business taxes, wealth building, and creating financial freedom. Besides her own show, Suhey has also been featured on Sell Without Selling, Business Spotlight USA, and today she's our guest in the conference room. So, Suhey Piedra, good afternoon, and welcome to the conference room.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you. I love that introduction. Nice and exciting.
Excellent. Excellent. So every hero has an origin story and you're the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from just starting out to providing all this extraordinary wealth building advice to your clients?
Well, you know, a lot of individuals say taxes are boring and I truly believe that, right? You're making them sound very exciting. So thank you for that. Originally, my story of how I got started with this goes way back to when I was very young, maybe probably 13, 15, somewhere around there. My parents are, immigrants to this country. They came from Mexico and they never really spoke the English language. So one day, they asked me to help them with their tax returns. They couldn't figure out what went to state, what went to federal. And I looked at them and I could not make sense of them, right? And so I took him to my neighbor, and my neighbor is, you know, was a white old gentleman. And I was like, you know, Mr. Tracy, can you please help me, you know, put these together for my parents? I have no idea how these documents go. And he's like, I have no idea. And I'm like, but wait a minute, you speak English perfectly fine. You're a white gentleman. Like, how can you not know? And he's just like, I can't tell you how, you know, these documents. So at a very early age, I realized that it had nothing to do with your background, your language, you know, where your origin is from. It's just taxes are just complicated for the majority of us. And so I started to learn them at a very young age of necessity for my parents, but then realized right away that I was really good at explaining them and, you know, going through them. And I found interest in making things a little bit more simple. And that's not very common. So I do get clients that when they come in, they're like, you make taxes seem so different than what I'm used to, right? And so it became my mission to really help individuals understand what are these documents saying about you? How can they help you? And how do they hurt you? And how to really play that game. So, you know, now fast forward 21 years later, and here I am with a business that helps individuals really get ahead of the ball with, ahead of the game with taxes.
Right. Okay. So let's just dig into that a little bit deeper. Okay. So you made a point earlier on where you said taxes can either really hurt your business or can really help them. Now, as a business owner and as a taxpayer, I don't think I have ever been particularly happy about paying taxes, right? And I'm sure most people listen to this feel the same way. Although, that being said, somebody recently said to me, you should always be happy about paying taxes because the more taxes you pay, the more money you're earning. And I hear that.
Yeah.
But having said that, how can a better understanding of taxes help you either as an individual or as a business owner?
Well, you know, it can definitely help you understand. If you understand what is all going into the tax return, the majority of us are told, you know, we need to file a tax return between January and April to meet a deadline, right? And so we are just doing what we're supposed to be doing to meet this deadline. We want clients to plan ahead of time. So if you work on your taxes during the current calendar year, there's many strategies that could be put into play during the calendar year that will help us mitigate the tax. So when a tax preparer tells you, okay, this is what you owe, or this is your refund, you don't know why you owe, you don't know why you're getting a refund, you just take it and you run with it, right? What we want you to start learning how to do is, how can you improve that tax return, and how can you make things better work in your benefit? So what we do is we explain to you what, if you, let's just assume that you came in to do a quarterly review or something, and we were going through and we projected your tax return. And I say, based on what you're making, whether you're a W-2 employee or you have your business, let's say that we're estimating that, you know, you're going to owe, I don't know, $20,000, right? But since we're still in the current tax year, how about we throw in a strategy here and a strategy there? And before you know it, we can mitigate your tax and bring it down to only owing $10,000, right? And so all of a sudden you're like, well, I'd rather owe 10 than owe 20, right? And so we have enough time during the current calendar year to put those strategies into play to help mitigate that tax. Now you're driving, and no longer is the tax return driving you. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely.
And a lot of the times when I tell clients, this is what you need to do, we have plenty of time to do it. But again, there's so many other strategies that you could put in there. One thing you mentioned, though, is they said, well, if you're paying taxes, that means you're making money. That's a good thing. I'm all for that. I want to protect your purchasing power. I want you to use some of that purchasing power to invest into purchasing, you know, other businesses, real estate, your own building, things like that, right? So we have to all also keep track of what is your purchasing power. The thing is, I want you to pay smart taxes, meaning there's a, you know, paying taxes with the purpose of acquiring something else. But if I'm not going to...
Let's dig into that a bit more. What do you mean by that? And how can taxes help you acquire something else?
So let's just to say you just did your tax return, and then you cross the street to the bank and you say, I'm ready to buy my house, right? And the bank turns around and says, well, your taxes look great. You didn't owe anything this year, but you wrote off the kitchen sink, and therefore I can't lend you money to buy your first house. Does that make sense?
Why would that happen? Why would they do that?
Because the bank is saying that even though you brought in money, you didn't report any income. You reported losses, or you reported such little income that they cannot qualify you for a loan or a mortgage or anything like that, because you don't have enough resources to pay back that loan. According to the taxes you just filed, you're broke. Or according to that taxes you filed, you know, you're not making enough to support that mortgage.
Right. So basically, what I'm hearing is that your taxes tell a story of your financial health. Perfect. And unless you are proactive about your financial goals and how your taxes can tell the appropriate story to take you there, you may find that even though, yeah, you've saved a boatload of money on taxes, you're not going to get anywhere near the financial goals that you want.
Correct. And that's where the disconnect is, I believe, in our system in general, in our industry in general, right? There's tax preparers at every corner, but how many of them are really asking you, what are your goals? What are you trying to do? You know, where's your business going? The health of your business, the health of your overall, you know, income when it comes to your W-2s and stuff like that, right? Mm-hmm. They simply data punch information into a system, and then they give you a tax return, and then say you owe or you have a refund, right? Based on the information that you provided. Right. But none of them are helping you. I don't want to say none of them. The majority are not helping you really strategize to make sure that those documents are following the path that you're on, or that you want to be on, or those goals that you're trying to achieve. And a lot of times you don't find this out until it's too late, until you're already sitting in front of a lender trying to qualify for something. And they tell you, you can't, because those documents you provided do not support where you want to go. Right. And that's what we mean about planning and being proactive and really understanding what are those numbers saying about you and where are they taking you?
Right. Okay. Okay. So one of the things that that I mentioned in the intro in your biography was about having true financial freedom. Okay. And a lot of people talk about passive income. And you just mentioned a moment ago about your financial goals might be buying a building, investing in real estate, that kind of thing. Okay. So how can, what sort of strategies, perhaps either from a taxation point of view or from other points of view, might one want to consider when they're looking at that?
So when you, when we have these strategy meetings that I talk about, these tax planning meetings, if one of your goals is to, for example, you know, buy rental properties or maybe buy your first property, or maybe one day own the warehouse where your business is being ran out of or something like that, right? So we start to look at that and I start to explain to you how the numbers that you're currently reporting are going to help you or going to hurt you in for that path in that direction that you're going to take. But not only do we do that, let's assume that, you know, you want to start creating passive income through real estate. A lot of the clients originally would say, one day my dream is to own a real estate property. And then I would meet with them again the next year and I'd be like, what happened to that? Well, I didn't know how to, you know, buy my first rental. I don't know what it all takes. I don't know. I'm afraid of this. I'm afraid of that. So I started to create teams that would help come in and educate us on how to invest in rental properties, right? Sometimes people were like, I didn't realize how to purchase a property, say in Tennessee, for example, right? Because I don't live in Tennessee and I've never visited Tennessee. Well, guess what? We have teams in that area that can educate us on what properties of Tennessee, you know, what areas of Tennessee are good areas to invest in, or what areas, you know, are good for Airbnb, things like that, right? So what we started to do is we were trying to solve that problem that our clients were having. And then all of a sudden, now we were talking to lenders about what is it that they need in order to qualify for a property in those areas. And so sometimes people realize that all they needed was a down payment of, say, you know, $20,000, $30,000 versus thinking that you needed to buy a property in California where your down payment is $200,000. So all of a sudden, acquiring real estate for them, if that's their goal, was a lot more achievable for them. And so those are kind of the what I call my real estate inclined individuals.
Right. Okay. So let's dig into that a bit more. I'm fascinated by that. So, okay, I live in Las Vegas. Okay.
Okay.
And round our way, the kind of houses that live that are around here are probably somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million houses. Okay. Mm-hmm. There or thereabouts. Okay. There are some less, some more, some, I mean, Gene Simmons of Kiss recently sold his house for $14 million. and by the way, no, I didn't buy it. Maybe not. but for the most part, you're looking at that kind of price range, right? So if somebody's going to buy $1 million house as an investment, the kind of word on the street is that you're going to need anywhere between sort of 25% and 50% down payment in order to, you know, as an investment property. Okay. And the banks are always keeping a very close eye on things like loan to value ratio, and particularly after all the tightening up after 2008, funnily enough, I actually watched, I rewatched The Big Short, the movie, The Big Short, you know, a couple of weeks ago. You know, the world is a very different place in 2023 than it was in 2007. So with all that in mind, it's, I think understandable is probably the wrong word, but understandable for the people like me who don't live in the world of real estate, who, you know, I'm a headhunter, I'm a podcaster, I'm not a real estate investor, right? Who, if I wanted to invest in real estate, could be very intimidated by it and think right from the get-go, well, there's no way I can buy next door and rent it out. So what do you, so with that in mind, what do you think are the key misconceptions that people have? And beyond that, the primary things that people really ought to be thinking about when it comes to developing a real estate portfolio.
Yeah. And you mentioned a lot of valid points. Okay. You have to understand there's risk involved with anything that we invest in, right? And anything that we're going to, you know, put some money down in or whatever, you know, there's going to be risks involved. Real estate is going to be something that it's an industry that fluctuates, right? Look what happened in 2008 where properties devalued so much. Will that happen again? Who knows, right? So there's going to be risk involved with everything. What I'm talking about is, yes, I talk about real estate as a avenue for you to create passive income, but there's other ways that we can do so, right? Real estate to me just seemed to be one of the easier ones to educate clients on. Okay. And to me, it's all about educating ourselves. What makes you feel comfortable in beginning to buy your first rental property? And that's why we created these teams and these resources to help us feel comfortable. Okay. But I'll use me as the personal example. I deal with clients that come in all the time to do their taxes and to do their tax planning meetings and realize that a lot of the individuals that had passive income from real estate or that had diversification in real estate were doing a lot better than the ones that didn't. Okay. And so I was like, how is it that you invest in, how is it that you buy properties in these states and yet you don't live there? So I began to learn from them and I read the Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, right? And I started to put the two pieces together. And I always found that there's a disconnect. There was a disconnect because people didn't know how to use their taxes to help them acquire things like this. They kept hurting their own financials and their own purchasing power because all they thought about was the tax bill instead of thinking of the bigger picture of what you could build had you just paid some of these taxes, right? And so that's where it starts. It stems off of that. And then from there, we were like, okay, well, the next thing was, well, how do I get in contact with these people to help me buy these properties if I've never been in these places? So I started borrowing the property managers, the real estate agents that these other individuals were using and creating relationships with them. And so I started first with Ohio. Ohio was the first state that I started to do this with. And so I met the agent all via Zoom and phone, and he, introduced me to the property management company and again, built these relationships before I purchased my first property in Ohio. I purchased my first property.
Just out of interest, why specifically, was Ohio of all 50 states, why?
Because that's where I had the relationship. So a relationship goes a long way, right? Yes, I can look up on Google an agent in Florida, right? But there's no relationship there. This agent was already working with one of my clients, two of them actually. And so I wanted to basically walk on their steps, follow their footsteps. And so I built the relationship there. I bought my first house from him. I've never been to Ohio. I've never visited this house. And it's a $70,000 property. Okay. I said, okay, I'm ready to buy my first property. And so he showed me a few properties, via email, online, or whatever. And then I looked him up on the online Redfin and all that good stuff. And then I said, okay, I like this one. It was $70,000 for the property. And as an investor, I had to come in with 20 to 25% down, depends on your financials. Okay. And it ended up being that I had to put $17,000, $17,500 or something like that into as my down payment. I'm like, oh, I could do that. And, you know, and so then I'm like, no problem. So I got my first property, put the $17,000 down. They did the inspection. They did everything. They managed the property. They put the tenant in there. Everything was done for me in such a way that it made it so easy that I was like, I want to do it again. So I did it right. And three months after I purchased the first one, I purchased the second one because it was that easy, right? And I was like, cool. So this was late 2020, early 21 when I bought the second one. And I've had them ever since. So the properties have appreciated in value, I mean, year to date right now, about $40,000 to $50,000 each property. Okay. With the $17,000 investment on each one. And I cash flow about $3,600 a year from each property. Okay. So again, when I figured this out and I was like, you know what, this is not as hard as people make it seem, I started to introduce that to my other clients and I said, look, I did it. You can do it if you want. Now, some of these people fly out to Ohio, fly out to Tennessee, fly out to Kentucky, wherever they're buying the properties from. And, you know, if it happened to be across the street from one of my house, I'll be like, hey, take a picture and send it to me because I've never been, you know. But again, it's, to me, I feel like when I meet clients that are successful, we don't mind sharing the story. The clients don't mind that I share their story or that I give the resource to another client and say, hey, you were struggling with this. Here's who so-and-so uses. Check it out. See if this works for you. And, but that comes because I take the time and I spend the time with my clients to meet on a one-on-one basis to really find out what's the problem. And then don't just say, okay, this is how to fix it, but also help them with the resources they need to solve that problem, you know? And I think that that's where the connecting comes in play, is because we can share those informations and provide it to clients. I have a client that purchased 6 properties last year. You know what I mean? And they're all in five different states. Now, I will tell clients, don't purchase all your properties in the same state because of natural disasters. You want to diversify your properties because we don't know. Look, you know, Florida was in, you know, just had a hurricane. So you don't want to have all of your doors in one location. And so diversifying your doors is always very, you know, recommended. Just like anything else, you want to diversify as much as possible.
Right. That's amazing. So what step, just let's jump into a little bit further. What steps did you actually take to buy either that first property or subsequent properties where you've never been? And don't get me wrong, I get that there's a difference between buying a house you want to live in, because you right. have to fall in love with the house because, you know, it's got the right view, it's got the right neighborhood, it's got the right, I don't know, backyard, it's got enough bedrooms and all that sort yeah. of stuff for you, right? And that might be very different to the considerations of an investment property, right? But nonetheless, how were you able to determine, and what steps did you take to determine that that was the right, let's just call it the right investment, not necessarily the right house? Yeah. The right investment.
So we now have Excel spreadsheets that help us calculate what properties are cash flowing and what properties, you know, will be a break even. You know, we have to take into consideration like property taxes, insurance, property management, and all of that good stuff. But what we offer in our community is the knowledge base of others that are more seasoned in the industry as well. What it ends up being is you have to treat it like a business, right? You have to treat it as this business is supposed to give me the tax write-off I need, the tax-free income that I'm looking for, the cash flow that I need. What is the purpose that you're doing this? Okay. Is it because you want to create something for early retirement? Is it something that you want to leave, you know, generational wealth for your beneficiaries, kids, grandkids? Is it something that, you know, you want to have for when you're 80 years old? Like, what's the purpose of this, right? Because that's also going to help you determine, let's look at it as a business. Is this going to meet those goals? Is this going to meet those, you know, what you're looking for? If you look at this and you get emotionally attached to it, if there's, if you self-manage all that, it takes your time. I'm not saying don't do it. I have clients that do their own Airbnbs and all that time, all that stuff. But to me, my profession is I'm a tax planning individual. I work on taxes, right? I am not a property manager. I am no expert at sending the plumber. I am no expert at, you know, evicting somebody. Like, that is not me. Could I do it? Of course. I could research and I'm pretty sure I can figure it out. But the amount of time it takes, now all of a sudden, that's my business. And I'm not a manager. That's not what I'm doing. I want those properties to serve a purpose. And that's all I care about.
Right. Okay. And when you talk about, you mentioned, for example, that first house that was, that you bought for $17,000 down and a $70,000 house that's depreciated, sorry, the value of which has gone up by, did you say 40?
Right now it's about 40,000. When last year at the peak of the market, I think it was like 50,000, 60,000, something like that. But
so almost, so now it's gone up by about 70%, right?
Yes.
Which is bloody good for like in that in a little
into almost 3 years yeah. that I've had them.
That,
yeah,
that,
I haven't
that's
had them
an incredible
years.
Return. And so when you are looking at an investment like this, are you looking primarily at the anticipated appreciation of the value of the asset, or are you looking more at what the cash flow positivity is going to be? As in, because you mentioned that that's kind of yielding about $3,000 a year, or is it more as long as it washes its face, as long as I'm not going to lose money on a monthly basis from this? I know that the likelihood is that the market is such that in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years time, it'll more than doubled in value.
Right. So the thing is that everyone's going to have different goals on why they look at those properties, right? Like I mentioned, what is the end goal? There, I might have some people that are really looking for the cash flow. So that's the area that you want to focus on, properties that are may not appreciate in value so much year after year, but guess what? Consistently, they're cash flowing really well, right? But if you want to turn around and maybe 1031 exchange these properties, exchange them for other properties or do something else with them and you want appreciation, then maybe that's the main focus that you want to do. But again, it just depends on everyone's goals. Now, in California, a property can easily appreciate $100,000, $200,000, you know, in a year or two if that's what the market is doing. Well, these properties, they were never worth that. So they're not going to appreciate $100,000, $200,000.
Right.
But the percentage is still there. There still may have really good appreciation. What I consider these is like planting little seeds in different places, right? And then having them all serve a different purpose. Some of them could cash flow better than others. Some of them can appreciate and value better than others. But what I recommend clients do is just let's get started. Let's see where you land, what your first property is and how that's affecting your tax return. A lot of the times people purchase properties not knowing what it is that it's doing to the tax return. I find tax returns that have locked up losses or depreciation in real estate that they haven't utilized in years because they don't know how to unlock them. And the tax preparer is not taking time to let them know how to unlock those losses. I have clients that have real estate property that come in and then they're paying taxes on all this cash flow when they shouldn't have to if we just strategize and plan it a little bit different. So there's ways to get away with not having to pay taxes on real estate if you know how to utilize the tool to its benefit, you know, to your benefit, obviously.
Right. No, absolutely. So, and just going back just for a moment, you mentioned, like, for example, that there are, you know, properties in California that could appreciate by $200,000 every couple of years. But I like the point you were making of if someone's investing, say, you know, buying a number of, say, $70,000 or $100,000 houses, right? And they only have to put down, say, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. They may be able to buy four houses in a year,
right,
where they probably couldn't have bought, like, while they're still waiting to buy their first house in, say, California.
Right.
So, and again, back to your point about diversification, that rather than taking one investment of, okay, I want to buy a $500,000 house, I'm going to need $250,000 to do it.
Right.
Instead, mm-hmm. I'll buy five $100,000 houses and still require the same amount, but I can actually get on the ladder and get the first one under my belt.
Yeah.
You know, much, much sooner.
And start to learn how to play the game, because I think that's what we all miss out on, right? Is learning how property managers work, how, you know, working with tenants is. A lot of people have misconceptions and they have fears. And I'm like, look, get started and let's address things as they come up, right? Because most of the time, you know, I tell clients, gossip spreads like wildfire. So if you have a tenant that you're trying to evict, hasn't paid rent in forever, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, that's really good gossip, right? And so that story is going to spread a lot more than the one that pays you on time every month. And, you know, you don't have any problems. Well, there's no gossip there. So you're never really going to hear that story, you know? But I always tell clients, let's get started. Let's look at what the opportunities are. I still want you to buy properties in, you know, Nevada and Arizona and Texas and California. I still do. You still need them for the strategy to play out the way that we want it to. So you still need a more, you know, I don't want to call them expensive, but higher value buildings and stuff like that. But let's get started to get some of those little things out of the way that we fear so that we address them and we get to move forward. And once you start to play, it's like the Monopoly game, right? You want to purchase as you go along more and more and more if possible, so that at the end of the day, you win the game.
Right. No, that's a fantastic analogy. If somebody just waited and waited and waited until they could afford a hotel on Park Lane and Boardwalk, then, you know, everybody else would have built a lot more wealth just putting down a house here, a house there, a house here, a house there, and then right. building up to those hotels. So no, that's a frighteningly good analogy. So what would you say would be the, realistically, if somebody listening to this was thinking, you know, that all sounds great, but I'm not necessarily a high net worth, you know, individual, or I'm earning, but I'm spending as quick as I'm earning. Okay. Mm-hmm. What would you say would be a realistic kind of minimum threshold if somebody wanted to invest in property and use that to their tax advantage?
So I have a perfect example for that, you know, and this is the part of let's just try it and see what happens kind of method that I have is let's talk to a lender. Let them tell you no, and let's fix the no's, right? Let's fix why they say no, and let's fix those, right? I have a client who was making $75,000 a year, you know, now owns 12 properties, is able to retire early because the majority of them are paid off, and not by him, but by rental income that he used because he still had his regular job. So he didn't change his lifestyle. Right. He still lived off of his $75,000 W-2, whatever he was, you know, earning. And then these real estate properties just paid themselves off. So any cash flow, he would throw it on to the principal of, you know, one of the properties, the first one he acquired. And so before you know it, these properties got paid off. And then he would do the same thing to the next one and continue to use the extra cash flow to pay off the next one and so on and so on. So now the properties are all paid off, so he gets to cash flow all of that money in his pocket and he can retire early, right? Is this going to work out for everybody? Maybe, maybe not. But what I'm trying to tell you is that it's doable. It's not about how much money you make. It's about what you do with your money. You know, it really has to do with what it is that you do with your money. And that's why I tell clients you're missing out on really good opportunities because no one's taking the time to really say, hey, you're making $100,000 on your tax return. Did you know that there's a possibility that you could do this? You know, or people believe that they need to make a lot of money in order to have, you know, a financial advisor. It's like, that's not true. A financial advisor can help you whenever you're ready to open a Roth or an IRA or something. You know, it doesn't have to be this huge investment in order for you to have the advice. It's just, we don't know that. And so we miss out on such great opportunities.
Is there a way to link together? Like, for example, a Roth or an IRA or any form of kind of tax advantageous mm-hmm. investment utility. Are there ways to link that with, for example, an investment in a property? So, for example, could you put the money into some kind of investment vehicle, but then use that money to invest in a property?
Oh, for sure. Nowadays, there's a lot of things out there. There's self-directed IRAs that you could do. I mean, there's many things. It goes back to, again, having what are the client's goals? What are they trying to do, right? Like, for example, with me, I wanted the cash flow. I wanted the money because I believe that there's industry cycles and that all businesses, you know, can have seasons that they're down, you know, things like that. And so I wanted the money I want the properties to cash flow so that if I do need help paying a utility bill, or if I do need help having money for, you know, making a car payment or something like that, that these properties can assist with that. Or if one of the tenants wasn't paying, that the other property can help me pay for that mortgage or whatever. So I prefer the cash flow outside of a retirement vehicle, but there's definitely ways that they could be inside of a retirement vehicle if that's what the client wants.
Right. Okay. And by the way, I know I'm asking you lots of kind of like tax advice, okay. and I just want to make it clear to anyone that's listening that this is purely for educational and, you know, informational and entertainment purposes. This is not tax advice in any way, shape, or form. But the one final question I wanted to ask on that was, you mentioned like the gentleman who was earning, say, I think he said $75,000 a year, but over the course of a period of time, he accumulated 12 fully paid off houses. Okay. If you sell a house that you're not living in, again, received wisdom, and we all know what received wisdom is that you're going to get clobbered with a huge tax liability as well. So what steps should somebody take to ensure that, you know, if, for example, the person you referred to, he decides to retire early and he thinks, right, okay, I'm going to retire early. On the one hand, he may well decide that his retirement is he'll sell perhaps one house to get a bit of a lump sum, but then the rest of them continue to pay him the rental income.
Okay? Right.
And then he'll live off the cash flow from that. Or alternatively, he'll just be like, you know what, I'm going to sell the whole lot and do something else with it. You know, maybe put it in something else and live off the interest, or just start to kind of slowly draw from that. Okay.
Yeah.
So what would you think, and again, I'm sure every situation is different, but broadly speaking, what steps should somebody take so that when they do find themselves at a point of retiring with a fully paid off property portfolio, what steps should they be taking to ensure that either A, they're not, you know, clobbered by a huge tax bill, or B, that they're not then sticking all this money in the bank and then eventually draining the money away.
Right. So a lot of factors come into play, right? This is why I keep saying with proper strategy, so much can be accomplished,
right?
What is the end goal? Some people will say, well, I'm trying to get out of the real estate business because I'm getting older, right? And that's totally fine. But there's ways that you can 1031 exchange these properties into other sources that will be outside of you managing properties.
Okay, sorry, just to be clear, when you say 1031, you use that phrase a couple of times. What exactly is a 1031? Tell me a little bit about that.
1031 exchange is an IRS strategy, okay, that allows you to exchange one rental property for another, okay, or one real estate investment for another. So there's ways that you can exchange one property, okay? I can exchange my $70,000 single family residence for, say, a multi-unit, okay? And not pay taxes. What happens is the IRS allows us to roll whatever appreciation, whatever taxes I have into the new property, okay? So you're exchanging for something else. And right now, the IRS only allows you to exchange real estate for real estate. Okay. It could be a piece of a commercial building. It can be, you know, I don't know, land, storage units, whatever. So if you're trying to exchange from one property or multi-properties to one, you can do that. So this client that has 12, he can exchange all 12 of those properties for one apartment complex. He can exchange all of those properties for $1 million property or $2 million, whatever the value of those properties adds up to. He can move all of those into something else where he no longer manages the building. So there's things that he can actually do. And the tax will roll over to whatever he exchanges it for. So there would be no tax liability if done properly. Okay. With proper planning, he can maybe sell one property and we'll look at what is that going to cost him for taxes. Is that something that he's willing to do? Maybe there's tax write-offs on the other houses that can help him offset that gain. So again, it's like a game. What puzzle pieces do we move
right,
to get away with the least amount of legally paying taxes? And that's the game. That's the fun right there.
Right. Okay. Great stuff. So this has been absolutely fascinating. Okay. this has been just incredible. So what three tips or strategies would you recommend if somebody wants to be successful in overall reducing their tax liability or perhaps building up and accumulating more wealth?
So I always like to start with, let's know our numbers, right? We got to know where we are at. And I know a lot of us fear looking at our finances, looking at, you know, how much money do we really have? But it's so important to know where we stand so that we can set a good foundation of where we're going to go, right? And then number two would be those goals. Make clear goals. What is it that you want to do? Do you really want to retire early? Or, you know, maybe have, you know, accomplish something that, you know, have $1 million house by the age of, you know, 40, whatever it is that you want is like, let's make sure that these numbers can direct us and take us there. So be very proactive with our tax returns and, you know, with all our numbers. And the bottom line is that tax returns are part of our finances. They're part of our numbers. They're part of, you know, how much money do we really make? And I think that's part of the reason why we don't want to look at it. We kind of turn, you know, our face the other way when they show us those reports. We're like, I just don't want to look at it. Just tell me how much I owe or how much I'm getting back, right? It's because it has to do with us knowing where we stand. So I really recommend knowing our numbers, you know, and then having those clear goals. And then overall, it's just being very good about having a team behind you, a good, you know, whether it's a CPA, tax professional, financial advisor, you know, that team of individuals that are going to help you protect your wealth. There's so many ways to save on taxes. And it just amazes me that, you know, a lot of us do not take advantage of it. We always say, oh, you have to be super rich and wealthy to hire, you know, these great strategists. And I truly don't believe that that is true. It's just we have to find the individuals out there that are going to take the time to educate us on what we've got going on. And right. It's very doable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, Suhey, what's next for you and for Prominence Business and Wealth Management?
Gosh, what's next? So, I mean, I'm on a mission to really educate individuals and get the message out, right? Part of the reason why I'm actually here is I want people to know that there's people like me out there that are willing to help, right? And there's so many sources out there nowadays that can help you create that passive income and make it tax-free. So that's my message out there. I'm going to continue trying my hardest to get that out there, so that people know not to fear the IRS, not to fear your taxes. They're actually pretty fun when you know how to work the
whole thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Taxes are fun. I'm going to print on a t-shirt.
Thank you, Simon. I love that excitement too.
Great stuff. And if people wanted to reach out and work with you and benefit from all this incredible knowledge and experience, how can they do that?
So definitely, you know, recommend following us on social media. We have Instagram. We have the podcast that shares a lot of, you know, good information. And, you know, I have a monthly webinar that I talk a little bit about these tax strategies. And our next one is October the 4th. But go to our website, all our information on how to contact our social media and register for this webinar is on our website at prominencebusiness.com.
Okay, great stuff. And I'll make sure that we have a link both to your website, all your socials, and of course, to the webinar on October the 4th. So, Suhey, thank you so much. This was just, who knew we could have such an entertaining conversation about taxes and me come away thinking, wow, the IRS are not big, horrible, scary people. They're people that are going to help me advance my my journey and towards my financial goals. This was an incredible, incredible conversation. Suhey, thank you so much for hanging out. I really appreciate all of your knowledge, your expertise, and the incredible value you've dropped. So, Suhey Piedra, thank you so much for coming into the conference room.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you so much. I love the energy.
Coming up next week on the conference room, I'll be talking to organic marketing expert, Melissa Mitchell.
Nobody goes to social media to buy. So if you think about that, no one picks up their phone and says, I'll be back in a minute, love. I'm just going to scroll because I need a new pair of shoes. No one does that. But they will buy if they're scrolling and they've got that emotional or rational reason to buy with you. So I'm not saying people don't buy on social media, they absolutely do, but their intention is not to buy when they pick up their phone.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comment section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.